Hello everybody, this is Philippa Kelly here, welcoming you to our production of The Winter's Tale, directed by the fabulous Eric Ting. Now, this play begins in winter and will move forward to the spring, but I might begin by mentioning to you that you could well come out to the theatre and feel like it's the middle of summer, but by late in the evening, it might get a tad wintry. So in your Bruns bag, I think it would be wise to pack a hat, a coat, a blanket. Because of COVID, we need to be more careful about sharing blankets, so bring your own, and come out to enjoy this evening with us. Well, a sad tale's best for winter. This is the line spoken by King Leontes' young son Mamilius, leading us into what is going to be a very wintry time in the first half of the play, which is set in Sicilia. Let me tell you just a little about the plot to get us going. We meet, first off, Leontes, his wife Hermione, who is 9 months pregnant, and Leontes' boyhood friend Polixenes, who has been staying as a guest in Sicilia for the last 9 months. Polixenes and Leontes played together as children, and when they became adults, Polixenes went off to be king of Bohemia, and Leontes stayed in Sicilia. Both of them married, both of them have a son each. But we never meet, in the first act, anyone from Polixenes' world or family because he's been in Sicilia. Suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere, Leontes becomes enraged with jealousy and comes to mistrust both his wife and his boyhood friend. In a split second, this seems to happen. And he comes to believe that Hermione is about to give birth not to his child, but to that of Polixenes. So jealousy is the trigger that sets this play into action. Jealousy is a familiar theme in Shakespeare's plays. For instance, you might remember in the Comedy of Errors that line, "How many fond fools serve mad jealousy." Then there is the green-eyed jealousy in Merchant of Venice in 1597. There is jealousy being called a green-eyed monster in Othello, which was written in about 1603-4. Another line from Othello, "Oft my jealousy shapes faults that are not." And then in the play written just before this one, Cymbeline, written in 1610, jealousy is called a stain as big as hell can hold. Jealousy transforms us, perhaps, into other people. Have you ever seen a person suffering jealousy? Of course, we all have, and often perhaps ourselves. But would you recognize this person as the person that they were? Sometimes, sometimes not. But at times, jealousy can be so maddening that we are almost unrecognizable, even to ourselves. And I might ask you, as you see the top of the play tonight, would you recognize Leontes, the beautiful man you will see with his wife at the top of the play, as the same person later, raging, pacing, throwing his own child to the wolves, or, more accurately, to the bears? What I propose is that jealousy doesn't transform us into different people. It transforms us into different versions of ourselves, unrecognizable to each other, and perhaps to ourselves. And listen to Leontes tonight, as he says in the midst of his rage, "Come, follow us. We are to speak in public, for this business will raise us all." And Antigonus, his servant, says in an aside, to laughter, as I take it, "Sometimes looking in the mirror and seeing a wronged and noble person, we ourselves may be completely blind to what others see, a jealous fool." Well, here's a question that I want to ask you, maybe to think about tonight. I've mentioned that love can transform us into other versions of ourselves. And early in the play, you'll see Leontes say that when he first wooed Hermione, persuading her to marry him, it took 3 crabbed months before he could get her to say yes. And so Shakespeare, as we know, specializes in not giving detailed backstories, because I think he realizes that plays on the fact that in our lives, so often, yes, we would wish that we could come to greet each other with a backstory written out on our foreheads so that other people could know why we say what we do, why we behave as we do, but we don't. Our backstories are usually unknowable to others. So I'm going to suggest that Shakespeare plays on this. And he gives us that line about the 3 crab months to make us wonder whether perhaps Hermione has been the long-time saviour of Leontes' best self, and that once he casts her off in the first act of this play, he becomes his worst self, and that it's Hermione's staunch serving woman, Paulina, wife to Antigonus, who has to step in to lead him back to the better version of himself. This will take 16 years, however. And here we come to the role of magic, because in this play, after intermission, we're asked to accept that 16 years have gone by. These 16 years are necessary for Leontes to come back to the better version of himself, and for the destruction that he has wrought all over Sicilia to be mended. And that mending has to happen in another place, in the kingdom of Bohemia, ruled over by none other than Polixenes. Well, another thing that you might want to think about as you watch the first act tonight is that what looks so crazy about Leontes' jealousy actually hews in some respect to the views of Aristotle that were very much in parlance at that time. Men in Shakespeare's time adhered to Aristotle's view that no marriage could ever be as truly close and virtuous as a friendship between men. As the philosopher Montaigne had put it, erotic love is nothing but a frantic desire for what flees from us. For Leontes, the falling apart of his boyhood friendship before his very eyes, and we could say wrought by his very hands, must be as upsetting as it is for him to see his marriage ignite and explode, because in one fell swoop, and by his own actions, he is now abandoned by both his wife and his friend, who've been able to reflect back to him his best self. And so he stands alone, having lost those twin anchors of his selfhood. Well, how does Leontes come back from this chaos and destruction? And I've mentioned that in playtime, it takes 16 years. And so we need to understand about this play that we accept the willing suspension of disbelief to believe that those 16 years have gone by and that the chaos and decay has suddenly, or over the passage of time, but suddenly for us because we come back after an intermission, it suddenly bloomed into spring, hope, possibility. And this is one thing that I love about the idea of magic in The Winter's Tale. Yes, we have the 16 years, that is magical. We have the oracle, the magical reading of what has gone on in Delphos that Leontes refuses to accept because he is going to believe what he is going to believe. But what this play suggests so beautifully is that the idea of magic is that it is within ourselves. Yes, we can see it as supernatural, but it is something that pertains to the human imagination that we all bear within us and we all share within us. We human beings, I think, invest those we love with elements of magic. So it is indeed magical that Hermione has been successfully buried for 16 years, with not a sighting, not a single moment, when her husband, who is the king of Sicilia after all, could have had an inkling that she's alive. But the magic that he eventually sees in her majesty is indeed the majesty, the dignity within each one of us, the gift of our unique selves, which he has deplorably denied, degrading Hermione and casting her off. So, in the second act after intermission, toward the close of the play, we will see him remark on magic in her. But I think what we're asked to wonder about is it the human imagination and not the stars, the providence, the imagination that can invest those around us with our own fears or, if we're fortunate enough, with our own dreams of perfection. And I take you back to that line from Midsummer Night's Dream. Love looks not with the eyes but with the mind, and therefore is winged Cupid painted blind. Then that other famous line from one of Shakespeare's sonnets, so long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee. From Venus and Adonis, love comforteth like sunshine after rain. There are miracles everywhere. The drop of water that makes a plant revive. The miracle of being able to see oneself anew. See another person anew. The miracle of compassion and forgiveness. It's our capacity to see and feel them that is the mark of our imaginations, our true humanness. Now, I've talked about miracles and resolutions, and I have a final question for you. Does Leontes deserve, after all the destruction he has wrought, does he deserve a happy ending? And when you see our show, what Eric has done to evoke the world of Bohemia, staged through Leonti's eyes. We're going to ask you to answer that question for yourself. And chances are that Eric will actually be there to host a talkback after the performance. And we can't wait to hear from you what you think about that question. There's so much more that I could say, but I know you've got to get dressed and ready for the theatre. And what I would say is that I've written a very extensive dramaturgy packet. And if you would like that packet, please email me, pkelly@calshakes.org, and I'll be delighted to send it to you. But for now, farewell, and see you in the Grove, where I'll be giving a Grove talk, or else there'll be some wonderful speakers who are there to entertain you and inform you. And I'll see you, most likely, at the theatre. Bye for now.